And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the next episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. We've both taken a little bit of vacation since our last episode. While I was in Mexico, absolutely nothing happened. Then Matt goes to San Diego, and there's a new college football playoff. So congratulations, Matt, on being out of town as our entire sport has blown up.
First vacation in well over a year. Well, my last vacation was January 2020, which I remember specifically because I was in Southern California when Kobe Bryant died, and I'm thinking, geez, like, of all the things that happen when I'm in Southern California trying to turn it off for a bit. And then you go away in the middle of June, which historically has been a pretty quiet time of the year for college football. And this year isn't for recruiting reasons. And now with the playoff, it's you know, these guys are all meeting in Chicago here. I'm going to see them later this week, all the commissioners, to talk about this. And I don't know what else there is to talk about because they decided to rush this thing up a week in advance, which was a pleasant surprise. And we will talk plenty about that. But I, for one, am very happy to see the way this thing has played out.
Yeah, I am too. We'll get into sort of Notre Dame's roster moves, more grad transfer than recruiting, but a little bit of that too. But, I mean, the playoff is everything, right? Like, that's – I thought Nicole Auerbach had a good story today just about is it too much of everything in it from a media perspective. I like Matt Brown's sort of take on just how historically oxygen-sucking Alabama and Clemson are today as top five teams. It is unprecedented that you would have two teams – running on parallel tracks like this at the same time. But I mean, as far as Notre Dame goes, I thought that the reaction to it, I mean, my initial one was like, the first one was the bye and not getting that. You're like, okay, that's a little bit uncomfortable. I probably need to take a second to think through all the ins and outs of this. But I mean, overall, as I wrote, like, Notre Dame wins more in this than they lose, which isn't to say they won everything and lost nothing. I mean, there's overall, this is a net positive clearly for Notre Dame, but that doesn't mean it's 100% moving in a good way if you're Notre Dame football.
Yeah, my first reaction was the same as yours, and granted I was kind of getting this like not exactly in real time because I was on the beach, but seeing it all after, I'm like, wait, why would Notre Dame do that? Wait, Jack Swarbrick was one of the four guys who really built this thing. Obviously, he knows what he's doing. And then when you hear the rationale, well, we're not in a conference championship game, so we're going to be fresher and we'll have the home game and so forth. It makes sense. I still don't know, though, where I come down on it as far as whether this is a good or bad thing for Notre Dame. Obviously, a good thing with the expanded playoff because there's more access. And when you go back and do the math, throughout many years in the Brian Kelly era, like, Notre Dame would have been in this thing a lot more than it has in the 14 playoff era. That being said, when you see it in print, like number five Notre Dame in 2020, number five Notre Dame in 2018, when they were number three in 2018 and number four in 2020, and you skip that by, like, that to me registered a lot more than the idea of Notre Dame not being a top four, not finishing as a top four team when they go undefeated, because they've gone undefeated three times now under Brian Kelly in the regular season, which definitely guarantees you a top four seed and usually guarantees you a number one, number two, or number three seed. And I know you're playing the number 12 seeds. You're not playing in Alabama or Clemson in most years, but I think at some point the idea of we want to be an independent, strong national university versus we want to compete for and win national championships on the football field become a lot less complimentary and a lot more conflicting when you see this thing play out, especially if we find a scenario or multiple scenarios in the coming years where Notre Dame does finish as the only undefeated team in the country and is number one or number two and doesn't get the benefits of that.
Well, I mean, don't you think if Notre Dame had done more in the playoff or had more sort of dominant undefeated seasons, that they would have had more ground to stand on here to say the bye needs to be part of it. I think the way Notre Dame is viewed as a playoff team, you know, getting blown out by Clemson, getting blown out by Alabama in the national championship game, like, and even the Alabama game last year was not a game you felt like Notre Dame was going to win. Like, I don't think Notre Dame has a whole lot of evidence to say, like, no, we do deserve special treatment because we have been so good. That I think Notre Dame's undefeated seasons based on their playoff performance do feel a little bit less than. And I think it's worth, like, the idea of Notre Dame getting a bye. What would it take for Notre Dame to get a bye? They would have to beat Clemson in the ACC championship game. We already saw that happen once. And they got absolutely played off the field. So even last year, when Notre Dame was a conference team, they wouldn't have got a bye, and they would have been the fifth ranked team. Even though in the playoff, obviously they ranked four because they made it. So it's, I just don't. I think the odds of Notre Dame or getting a bye as a conference team, if they had joined the ACC, are so low that it's not worth sort of flittering away your independence over this. To me, one of the sort of hidden wins in here is that Notre Dame's position as an independent is stronger today than it was about a week and a half ago. And if I was the ACC is one of the big losers in all this, because the best leverage you have to force Notre Dame to join is you can't make it in the playoff. And now Notre Dame has a better chance to make it in the playoff without going all in with the league.
They have a better chance of making the playoff. I just wonder if their ability to win a national championship is hindered. I mean, I just think for so long, independence was, and I say this complimentary, I don't say this to be critical, but everyone hated Notre Dame for their independence because it was very much a, you know, take your cake and eat it too kind of deal for Notre Dame. They got to do whatever they want, whenever they wanted, and they don't get to do that right now. So if you're conceding some points, some competitive points, by being an independent, and you're actually are doing that, that's when I take a step back and wonder, you know, what's really in it for Notre Dame from an independent standpoint. You especially have written some really in-depth articles that perfectly explain away why this is so important to them. But I do wonder, as we move forward in this country, in this world, like, I don't think Notre Dame joined the ACC tomorrow would be any less attractive of a university to people in Florida, in California, in Texas, all over the country. I think they'd be able to recruit, from a student population standpoint, whoever they want. I think from an academic standpoint, prestige-wise, it'd be every bit as good and as unattainable, if you will, as it is right now. I just think this could be the first step of many steps that eventually make this ACC-ND marriage full-time. And I say that because Jim Phillips is a new AD at the ACC who knows Notre Dame very well, who has the relationships there, who knows his number one, frankly, only priority right now is getting the ACC out of that terrible TV deal they're in right now. And the only way you do that is by expanding. And what better brand to expand with to get a better deal than Notre Dame? And I also think the scheduling standpoint, hypothetically, I think a lot of these teams could say, join us right now or you're on your own. And look right now, like, most of these teams are scheduled through 2040 in some cases. Like, I know you could get out of those contracts 20 years ahead of time, but I just think at some point it no longer becomes a distinction. It becomes a bit of a hindrance from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the ACC is not going to play hardball with Notre Dame over this. Like, I think there's too much good that Notre Dame brings to the league to sort of make great the enemy of good if you're the league. But there's no question, like, that league would make a heck of a lot more money on their next media rights deal if Notre Dame was playing conference championship eligibility and sort of a full conference schedule. Having covered Notre Dame forever and covered last year and not seeing USC or Michigan or premier home and home with Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, no Navy on there, no Stanford on there. I just feel like you look at Notre Dame's schedule and it's that while the university, I don't think, would be diminished by joining the league, I do think the sort of the reach of the football program and what makes it distinct, what makes it unique, would really fall away. And I think that's something worth protecting. I think that what would prompt Notre Dame to go all in is if what you're saying came to pass multiple times. That not just, and I'm saying like not just the four, not just if they finished third or fourth and they had to be the fifth seed, we would have to be talking about Notre Dame as 12-0 as the fifth seed. And I'm saying like Notre Dame number one, like as if Notre Dame on paper looked as good as Clemson, looked as good as Ohio State, looked as good as Alabama, they are a long way from that right now. So it's, I think in some ways for Notre Dame to convince itself like, no, we need to sort of cut out this extra game and drive a harder bargain, play in a conference championship game that we have a chance of winning. To me, that's more a Brian Kelly problem to solve than a Jack Swarbrick problem to solve, because it involves like enhancing your roster in a way that Notre Dame's trying to do right now.
Well, that's one guy I'd love to hear from.
Yes,
since
me
this
too.
Came from. I mean, I don't think he's upset about it. I don't think he's happy about it, because this is one more hurdle I think to climb in future years to win a national championship. Everything you said is true. I don't disagree with any of it. I don't know if that football program would be quite as demented. Like, I just think growing up and following college football and covering this program on a day-to-day basis for 6 years when I was at ESPN, like, the independence to me was, like, so cool. Like, oh, they get to do this. They get to do that. And no one can do a damn thing about it because they're Notre Dame,
yeah,
and they've got the money and they've got the fan base. And I just don't know if that – like, I just don't know if they have that kind of freedom right now. I feel like this is almost a concession to that kind of freedom, and it makes you peel back a little bit and ask some questions about, you know, what really are the pros and cons of doing this. I just don't think in 2021 and beyond, it's nearly as beneficial as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, really throughout the history of the entire
institution. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's, maybe it's the same thing as having the NBC contract. Like, you know, when it happened at the time, nobody else had anything similar to it. It really distinguished Notre Dame in some massive ways from everybody else, where they could sort of pick and choose players from all across the country. Now everybody's on TV. I'm not saying now everybody's independent, but everybody has the same access to the college football playoff, which is, I think, ultimately what's kind of driving the bus here. One thing that when you talk about the extra game, there are a couple things that I think are worth considering here. Well, three things probably. One, if you're the five seed, these are your 12 seeds that you would have played in the playoff era at home: Boise State, Houston, Western Michigan, UCF, Penn State, Memphis, Coastal Carolina. We're not talking about elite competition there in game one. The second thing is, when you move on to the quarters as the five seed, you're playing the four seed, which is not the fourth best team. It's the fourth highest rated conference champion. That team could be a legit top four team. But if you go back to 2012, when Notre Dame would have been the five seed, then they would have played Florida State in the quarterfinals when Notre Dame was undefeated 12-0. Florida State was actually, I think they were ranked 13th. At the end of the regular season there, they would have been the fourth highest rated conference champion. And then I think this is a question that you can put to Jack Swarbrick if you run into him in Chicago sometime later this week. Like, what's the scheduling of these games? Is the first round the week after conference championship week? Is it 2 weeks after? Is there a 2 week break between the quarterfinals and the first round? Because if there's a 2 week break between the first round and the quarterfinals, then I don't think that extra game really makes that big of a difference, especially if you're Notre Dame, because you're already off on conference championship weekend. So it's, if you have 2 weeks to prepare and then 2 weeks to recover from a home game in December against Coastal Carolina or Memphis, I don't think this is like a huge deal breaker. And I also think that as much as I would love to see the quarterfinals on campus, Notre Dame is thrilled that they're not, because they never have to go to Oklahoma or to Ohio State in the quarterfinals. They're playing that at a neutral site in a bowl game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm curious, we did this when the BCS expanded the playoff. We went back, you know, and saw, you know, what would it have looked like this year, what would have looked like that year, and we're doing that now. I am curious, like, how does the playoff selection committee rankings change with this new criteria? Because I think in the BCS era, you looked at the loss column, that was it.
Yep.
Like, nothing else mattered. In the playoff, it was, they decided to say, all right, it's going to be game control. It's going to be who you beat, not who you lose to. Like, Notre Dame had some really good teams that would lose to Clemson and Stanford by 2 points, and their best win was like Temple. Like, so they were penalized by not having that marquee win despite looking like a damn good football team. I'm curious how that will look like moving forward, especially as it relates to the Group of Five, which always gets the short end of the stick. I have a hard time seeing Coastal Carolina finishing that high when they're actually, like, there is a consequence for finishing that high.
Right.
I just think the people in that room are going to find a way to make it fit.
Well,
to the liking. Like, I don't think two Group of Five teams are going to make it most years, even though that is plausible.
Yeah, I mean, that last year was the only year that would have happened if you sort of game this out over the last decade. And last year, I don't think the committee could have avoided it happening. Like, there was no way to get Oregon from 25th.
Oregon messed that up, yeah.
Over
the Pac-12 messed that up. Yeah.
USC messed it up. I mean, USC is in the playoff if they beat Oregon.
They are, but they're supposed to play who? Washington? They weren't supposed to play Oregon. And the Pac-12 says, oh, we're going to give you Oregon, who hasn't played in 2 weeks. Short rest for USC. Here you go.
Yeah, they would be better off not having a game at all. But
yes.
I think there will be some... It'll be interesting to sort of see how that's jockeyed about, but one of the Power Five conferences would have to fall on their face so badly not to make it, and the Pac-12 can do it. Like, I believe in you, Pac-12.
I do. It was a pandemic year,
yeah. But I mean,
USC played six games.
There was a year. I think there was a year. If you game this out, the Big Ten wouldn't make it. So I think you have to go back to, it was the year Wisconsin blew out Nebraska in the Big Ten championship game.
That was the third place Wisconsin
I think that was the year Ohio State was on probation as well. So even that,
Penn State too, yeah.
Took a lot to happen. So you're going to have all five Power Five conference champions in. Like, I, as a college football fan, independent of covering Notre Dame, like, I don't know the last time I watched the Pac-12 championship game. Like,
I do. It's Friday night. What else is going on?
There are so many other things than
it's on campus.
Utah, Washington. I just think that you're going to have so many more games of significance in November now that I think the criticism that the regular season will be diminished is reversed. Like, mm-hmm. I think the regular season is enhanced.
Oh, it's everything we've been saying for 10 years.
Yeah.
The power brokers say, no.
I loved the 2012 moment when Notre Dame beats Wake Forest in the afternoon, and then Oregon loses to Stanford, Kansas State loses to Baylor. Like, you're never going to have that kind of moment again. Or I remember...
You might. The Group of Fives might.
Yeah.
To get in.
But, I mean, okay, the Group of Fives might, which is a lot different than Oregon, Notre Dame, and...
No, it is, but, like, it's like college basketball, right? Like, making the tournament. You theoretically wake up with a chance to win a national championship,
yes,
which you did not have before.
It's much more of a B-side feel to it, but you're right. There are similar stakes. But, like, I do remember, I think it was a Friday night game where, I want to say, Iowa State upset Oklahoma State.
Yep.
And just how that, like, rocked everybody. Like, you're not going to have that again either. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, like, I miss it. It was a cool thing, but I'm okay with that not coming back in the name of this progress.
But it, right. I mean, you're going to replace it with similar moments of or moments of similar stature for other programs. I mean,
more of them
If you're at Iowa State, North Carolina, like Louisville, like fine, but not blue blood college football programs. Boston College. I mean, I'm just naming random teams here. Like, what is the brand and financial ramification of a program like that making the college football playoff? It's got to be off the charts. It'd be the greatest thing to ever happen.
Yeah.
And it's completely impossible in a 4-team playoff.
And I mean, look, I love the idea of somebody on the West Coast being involved. You know, it's, I do.
Someone outside the South
being, you know, like our friend Adam Rittenberg has made this point a few times. It's just like the fact that you're losing, you know, your supposed national sport is not national at all. It's regional. No. Like, college football needs to be a national sport, and I think this really helps that, whether it's Oregon or Washington or USC or UCLA. I do not care who it is, but it just needs to be somebody. There has to be a tent pole out there, so it's not just who are the two best teams in the SEC, Ohio State and Clemson, and then, you know, Notre Dame and Oklahoma are fighting to get in there too. So I think this helps feel like a national sport will again be national.
No, it makes it much more fun. And, you know, I say pleasantly surprised when we talk about the playoff going from 4 to 12 because it took them, what, 140 years to go from 2 to 4? Or less of that because they couldn't even figure out how to put 2 in for a while before the BCS came around. And now it's just like overnight, we're going to skip the 6, we're going to skip the 8, we're going to skip the 10, we're going to go right to 12. And it sounds great. And it feels like the first time, maybe in forever, where like the actual power brokers of the sport are looking out for the greater good and not just trying to find their pockets and do what's best for them. I mean, look at that room. Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, Jack Swarbrick, and Craig Thompson, the commissioner of the Mountain West Conference, four of the most powerful people in sport. Greg Sankey, I think, is by far the most powerful right now when you look at all the commissioner changes going elsewhere. I mean, the SEC can do whatever they want. People are going to watch. People are going to follow. They're going to win. They're going to recruit the best players. And I think Bob Bowlesby alluded a little bit in the press conference last week to, like, the SEC was going to be fine no matter what. Like, we had to get them on board with what we want to do. And if you're Jack Swarbrick, if you're, you know, I mean, Greg Thompson's probably the toast of the town in the Group 5 right now for getting
the biggest
getting
winner of those four, for sure.
Absolutely. Them in the Pac-12. I just think this is great for the sport. It's great for everybody. And rarely do you say that. I mean, most of the times with conference realignment, yeah, like schools are doing it for financial purposes and there's positives that come from that. But the fans usually lose in that. You lose rivalries. You travel a lot more than you had to before. Things become much more difficult and you lose that Monday morning office banter of, you know, Kansas and Missouri playing in the Big 12 or something like that. You lose rivalries. This feels like the opposite of that. Like, this has just brought everyone together. It is just going to be really, really fun to see play out. But also, Coastal Carolina at Notre Dame, can you imagine how cool that would be for, like, Coastal Carolina fans or anything? Like, a game on campus, which I'd love to see the TV deals worked out with this because, well, Notre Dame have to play.
Yeah, that's a good, I didn't even think about that.
Like, that'll play the biggest role in all of this when it's all said and done. But
I do think there's one, I totally agree. I think one of the shocks of this was like people in college football looking out for other people in college football. Because this sport is very tribal. It's one of the things that makes it great. It's also one of the things that can make it dysfunctional. And in this instance, I think people sort of were able to get past the end of their own nose and see that other people matter out there. I do think one of the funky unintended consequences of this, if Notre Dame is good, is how Notre Dame fans will react to like consistently playing a Group of Five team at home in December, because it's not going to feel like a quote-unquote playoff game. It's going to feel like the sixth most interesting game on your schedule. On top of the NBC, I didn't even think about that. But I'd be curious.
Buy those tickets. That Group of Five. I think every Group of Five team will get behind the Coastal Carolinas of the world the UCFs of the world or whomever is playing at Notre Dame on that day. Like, they'll try to take that place over.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you hear Notre Dame fans talk about, you know, when they played Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl, like the no-win situation. Like, right. It's not quite that, but you're not going to – like, if Notre Dame wins its first playoff game and after losing to Clemson and Alabama and it's Coastal Carolina, I don't think you're going to be like, Notre Dame has finally snapped its playoff losing streak. Like,
now they go to Columbus next week as 14-point underdogs.
It's just not that's not really going to add up. But it overall, it's I think it's just fun to have something new to talk about with college football because the whole thing has just felt rather stale, and that includes Notre Dame making the playoff twice. Because it just feels like it's very top heavy, and then also like let's be honest, like there is no legislation that from Swarbrick, Thompson, Bowlesby, or Sankey that is going to lessen the impact of Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney on the sport. You cannot legislate greatness out. That's on Lincoln Riley. That's on Brian Kelly. That's on Clay Helton. You know, that's on Steve Sarkisian now, Dan Mullen. Like that's Jim a coach Harbaugh. Coaching. Yeah, he's not working out. That's a problem they need to solve, Kirby. But I do think this just the access and the fact that we're going to have more significant games. Like I made this point on a radio show I was on the other day. Like if you're Kyle Hamilton this year, say Notre Dame goes to the Peach Bowl. I don't think that's a playoff game this year, but New Year's Six game, you draw Florida. If you're Kyle Hamilton, you're probably like, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to be a top 10 pick. I'm going to focus on that. If Notre Dame plays Coastal Carolina in December, 3 years from now, and Kyle Hamilton was here, he'd be like, yes, strap it up. Let's go.
They're going to be NIL, more engaged. They're going to be NIL deals that probably have something to do with appearance fees or something of this. So, like, they're going to be, I think, incentives. Yeah. For these guys who actually play in these games, obviously they're going to want them if they're playing for a national championship.
Yeah, that's the biggest. Forget NIL. Like, that's the biggest thing. I think it also re-engages some players that probably have fallen away over the last few years with opt-outs. And I'm not criticizing opt-outs at all. I completely understand it. But I think this makes – it takes the game that would have been played anyway, and it makes it matter, and it makes it important, and it makes it dramatic. In addition to helping the regular season. So there's really just a lot to like. And while I understand Notre Dame fans being critical of some of the buy in particular, if you're a college football fan in general, this is everything you would want.
Our friends over at Yahoo on their podcast, Pete Dammel and Dan Wetzel, said, is there a way for, since college football is so insistent on keeping the Bulls happy and outsourcing their most valuable financial product to a third party, can the players essentially unionize or get NIL deals that require each of these bowl games to pay them an appearance fee for showing up and playing? And would that flip this thing on its head and say, oh, you know what, we're actually just going to play these on campus right now because we don't want to share the money with the players? I don't know. It was good podcast fodder and got me thinking because no one knows how this NIL thing is going to work out. The one point also, not to harp on the independence, you said it's like great for college football, good for Notre Dame. I'm still torn on whether I really love it or not for them. I think if they join the ACC from a like you said at the top of the show, they are winners because they now have more access to the playoff as independent. I think if they're the ACC, they're in this thing every single year because they're going to go 11-1 or 12-0. Whether they're in the Atlantic or the Coastal, like you're going to lose to Clemson, you're going to beat everyone else like you did last year. And I think a one-loss Notre Dame team with a non-conference schedule every year of USC or Stanford, Navy, and a random rotating opponent. If you go 11-1 with that, or 12-1, losing the conference championship game, I think you're in it every year as the second-best team in the ACC.
That is a good point, and I think you're probably right on that. I mean, I think you're, worst case, you're probably similar to, like, a Penn State, Oregon, where you're always worst at worst sort of 9-12, which is where 10-2 is going to land. That would be an interesting point. If simply making the playoff, would you be enhancing your chances by joining a conference? I think you're probably right. I think the answer is probably yes.
Well, and the other part too, I think Jack Swarbrick brought this up. Like, I'm tired of hearing about the 13th data point. Like, I get it. That's a funny comment, but like, are you doing this to appease the Twitter trolls, or are you doing it because it puts you in the best possible position to succeed? That's another part, too, where I thought it was really cool that Notre Dame didn't have to play a 13th game and could throw their middle finger up at everyone and say, ha-ha, we're in anyway. And now it's like, see, we're meeting you halfway. We'll see how it plays out. I just think the tides are turning a little bit in the independence department.
Yeah, you may be right on that. It's like, as much as I think this makes them more independent, you can see some choose your own adventure paths that this could all go down, where at the end of it, Notre Dame was like, actually, we'd be better off in the league.
Dabble ain't going to be around forever, and that ACC will be right there for the taking.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Why don't we spin it a little bit towards, I think when you were gone, I talked to Brian Kelly in person at a golf outing. The first time we were with
here,
Brian
Kelly. I was here.
Kelly.
I was at Northwestern that day.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that first sort of commentary on Kane Madden. I talked to him a little bit about the transfer portal. We had some NIL discussion, injury updates. And overall, I think the roster is with Kane Madden. At that point when we talked to him, Caleb Evans was still on the market, the cornerback from Tulsa who ultimately committed to Missouri, which I think would, if you had said when he entered the portal and Notre Dame offered, that would have been a shock destination. But I think over the last week and a half, much less so. Aaron Fletcher, the corners coach who was at Tulsa, moved to Missouri, not only coached Evans at Tulsa, but also recruited him to Tulsa in the first place. A real sort of influential figure in the athletic career of a Caleb Evans. So, I mean, but overall, I think Notre Dame, while corner would have helped, if they could have add a All-American level guard and a starting quarterback, it's hard to do a lot better in the transfer portal than that.
Two of, I think, the top 10 players in the Athletic's ranking of the top 50 transfer portal players this year. And yeah, playing one, the most important position where he's going to start, barring disaster, and another one playing a pretty darn important position of need that eases the anxieties of potentially having to start two true freshmen on the offensive line. It's good. And, you know, it sounds like Trevor Mendelson, the new GA on the offensive line, he had played at Marshall. He was a graduate assistant at Marshall. He helped this connection with Kane Madden a little bit. I know a lot of people had pegged him for Florida State. I mean, without knowing the kid and his priorities or anything about him, if I'm an offensive lineman and I look at what Florida State's put on the field the last 5 years and I look at what Notre Dame's put on the field the last 5 years, it seems like a very easy decision for me. And he is from Ohio, so it's not like this should be a huge like geographical cultural shock, culture shock for him either. But hey, how about those O-line GAs? Chris Watt last year, Trevor Mendelson this year, and they didn't have any in 2019 with the same roster that wasn't really good up front. Big coincidence, huh?
Yeah.
It's
amazing to me that, you know, Trevor Mendelson is probably not a name that Notre Dame fans even know who he is. But the fact that, yeah, he's from Ohio, from Dublin, Ohio, did not play at the same high school as Brady Quinn, but, you know, was a walk-on at Marshall and then sort of stayed on there to coach, where he was in charge of recruiting walk-ons. Cade Madden was a walk-on. And so that I never quite understood what the entry point. When Cade Madden went in the portal, I'm like, how do you bridge the gap between Marshall and Nowhere, Ohio, to Notre Dame? Like, I realize it's one state away, but it might as well be half the country. And lo and behold, they actually had a connection there in Mendelsohn, which I'm told was very instrumental in making that happen. That was the familiar face that sort of Madden needed to see just to get up here. And then, I don't know, did you see the video of Cade Madden getting out of Mike Norvell's, like, concept car while all the recruiting reporters were there to film it? Like, I think that...
I did not.
It was awkward, awkward, awkward. And I think that Notre Dame did itself a huge favor here by sticking to its guns in recruiting Madden about, like, come here, this is what you get. We're not going to treat you like a high school kid and do all the bells and whistles stuff because you're a grown man. And I think Cade Madden really appreciated that, opposed to, like, being put in this awkward position of getting out of Brian Kelly's, like, concept BMW or whatever the heck it was, and then having somebody from 24/7 film it. Like, it was just, it was super bizarre and awkward. And I think that Notre Dame... It was sort of one of the reasons I was surprised they didn't get a Caleb Evans, like, aside from the Aaron Fletcher part, is, like, Notre Dame, it's much more of an adult college football program than a lot of these other places. And if you're a grad transfer, and Brian Kelly sort of referenced this, like, if you have your stuff together and know who you are as a man, Notre Dame's probably going to be a little bit more attractive to you. And I think that's one of the reasons why they do so well in the grad transfer market.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know a Caleb Evans. His recruits seem much more high school-like to me, at least from afar, than it did college-like. I know Notre Dame was in on him early. He had visited there in Texas. He was from Texas. He didn't commit to Texas on the spot, so I think there was a natural inclination of, hey, this is a position of need for Notre Dame. He's going to start immediately. He's going to, you know, stay for 2 years if all goes well and have a nice second act to his career. But the longer that thing dragged out, then Georgia gets involved. He's tweeting his top five. He's announcing it. Like, on Instagram, and
Jackson State was one of them. Like, it, you know, at the end, it just was.
But I talked to people from all three. I talked to people from all three staffs a week before he committed from Texas, Missouri, and Notre Dame, and every single one of them pointed to a different one about where he was going to go. Like, the Texas guy thought he was a lock to go to Missouri. Missouri thought he was a lock to go to Notre Dame before Aaron Fletcher got his hands on him. Notre Dame was kind of up in the air, though they felt pretty good. It was just this weird kind of love triangle. And you look at it and you're like, this guy is a college graduate, right? It's not like a 17-year-old all over again going through this for the first time. And I know you probably don't get that kind of attention and notoriety when you're committing to a group of five school like Tulsa as you do when you're going to Texas, Missouri, or Notre Dame, or Georgia, but or Jackson State with Deion Sanders. But it was different. Is it a position Notre Dame could have used help at? Absolutely.
Yes.
There's another guy in the portal now who they brought out all the bells and whistles for at another position of need, who I don't think they're going to go after right now, but that would be interesting. Demetrius Robertson. Receiver now is the one I look at. Like, there's no one they're active with in the portal right now, as far as I know, nor will there be, barring any unforeseen entrance in the next couple of weeks. You had one guy transfer within the last week out of Notre Dame. I think they're down to, what, one scholarship receiver in the sophomore and junior classes? Is that
combined,
right?
Combined, correct. Yeah. It's pretty easy to look at the roster next year and think the most experienced and oldest player will be Xavier Watts, who, if you don't know the roster intimately, I mean, he was like their eighth or ninth receiver this year. That's just Kevin Austin, Braden Lindsey, Joe Wilkins, Lawrence Keys, Avery Davis, probably all out the door after this year. Following the Jay Brunell, Jordan Johnson combination, Cam Hart moved to corner, Kendall Abdur-Rahman moved to running back, and then moved to Western Kentucky. Like, it's been a bizarre sort of, I think, roster management with Dell Alexander in the receiver room. Can it all be righted in recruiting? Mostly. I mean, they hosted Tobias Merriweather, who was a four-star receiver from Washington, but just over the state line from Oregon, so closer to Portland. They feel really good with him. Feels like sort of a Notre Dame Stanford. You know, it's not 2011 anymore. Notre Dame wins the Notre Dame Stanford battles now. And then CJ Williams is another big one from modern day in Southern California. He's visiting at the end of the month. That's another one that they feel pretty good about. But until they get him on campus, it's hard to know. But the flip side of that is they had a 3-star commit and still do, named Amorian Walker from really nowhere, Louisiana. It's a small town between Baton Rouge and New Orleans that when they took, I think that some eyebrows were raised because I believe he was the lowest rated receiver prospect that had would have signed in the Kelly era. And at the time, Alabama was sort of sniffing around on him. I had heard from people around Notre Dame, but I was like, okay, well, if they were, he wouldn't really be a 3-star prospect. And lo and behold, just yesterday, he goes to Alabama, runs a 4.4 at their camp, and gets offered and has his picture with Nick Saban. So it just another step in kind of a weird situation at the receiver position. They need more help. That's without question the spot where I think they have to push the envelope furthest, fastest, because teams that are competing in the playoff have studs on the outside, and Notre Dame right now does not.
I think you may have shared this tweet from our colleague Bill Landis, who covers Ohio State. Buckeyes have signed, I think, 11 of the top 60 receivers over the last 4 classes. Is that right?
It was so top 60 each class, top 60 players. So it's not the top. So if you're ranked in the top 60 in the 24/7 composite,
gotcha.
Regardless of position. But Ohio State had signed 11 receivers who ranked in the top 60 nationally, regardless of position. Notre Dame had signed 2, I believe. But Jordan Johnson was one of them. So it's a
which is crazy because spot. Like they. Without having the intimate knowledge of the Buckeyes as I do, like Notre Dame or some ACC teams, like that was the most underdeveloped position there forever because they had an idiot coach in them named Zach Smith. And it seems like the minute he got out of there, they're getting whoever they want at receiver.
Yeah.
And they are just lighting it up. Like it's incredible how quickly, not that they've ever been bad, but like, that's just a remarkable number, and it just seems like, especially now, you know, there are a couple of kids out of Chicago. They just got one. They're probably going to get another in Carnell Tate. Like, it just seems like if you're a good Midwest receiver right now, it's almost like second nature. Like, they're going to Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, that's problematic because, I mean, it's this year, this cycle that's going on right now, there were 2 top 100 receivers in Chicago, Tyler Morris and Caleb Brown. One's going to Ohio State, one's going to Michigan, and Notre Dame was really not that close on either of them. They're certainly more involved with Carnell Tate. He's visited this month, and I believe is scheduled to visit again. But they Notre Dame has to figure out a way to sort of change those dynamics. Where if you're a Midwest top receiver, you go to Ohio State without looking anywhere else. Notre Dame needs to get a look from these players because you shouldn't have kids from Chicago that you can't get, and then you have to go to nowhere, Louisiana, to find somebody. Recruiting nationally is a good thing, but you got to have a little bit more sway locally, I think, if you're Notre Dame at that position.
Our listenership in nowhere, Louisiana.
Yeah.
I know a former podcast guest who's from there who probably wouldn't take kindly to you calling it that, but I don't know how they're going to feel about this episode, Pete.
It's a tricky situation, but it's one that Notre Dame has to get sorted out because, like, you can't keep writing state of the program stories and then have it be, and then they took another grad transfer at receiver, or they're really hoping that this senior who has never played has a breakout year. Like, you cannot live and die with, like, Javon McKinley stories. You got to have a Justin Ross in there. Hey, you got to have a Michael Floyd, Golden Tate, Will Fuller in there, Chase Claypool in there at some point. But
maybe Claypool was.
Yeah.
Didn't click for him until the end.
He was okay. Then he was kind of good. Then he was good. Then he was amazing. You got to find your Michael Mayer, Kyle Hamilton receiver.
Yes.
That's what you got to do. Somebody who comes in and can contribute right away. And then you know as a 3-year player after his freshman year, because then you know you're getting 2 years of a future pro for sure. That's kind of one of those how does Notre Dame get there from here dynamics that I think Brian Kelly, Tommy Reese, Dell Alexander are trying to figure out how do we solve this, because they're to a point now where I do think the staff is like, all right, we have to get better on the outside because that's where college football is going. Notre Dame can still have its identity in the run game, can still have a great offensive line and still have a power with Kyron Williams, Chris Tyree, backs like that. But you got to have at least an outlet on the outside. And like, I mean, Brian Kelly even mentioned this when we talked to him in the spring. Like, if we can't find a second and third option, you could take Michael Mayer away without too much effort. At that point, that's not a healthy place for Notre Dame to be.
Now, next year, with that offense line coming back, five tight ends, new offense, got Clemson and Ohio State on the schedule. You might just have to truck style everyone from here to there, because it's a bleak picture at receiver right now, but it could definitely change between now and then. I don't know if you had anything else you want to add. Did want to shout out the baseball team, which had an incredible run.
Absolutely.
Did not see that coming. That was the one program that I thought was really going to be hindered by the ACC joining in 2014, and they had a remarkable year. And Ned Beattie, if I pronounce that right, rest in peace. Rudy, yes. The most beautiful sight these eyes have ever seen, the most beautiful quote in a beautiful movie. Got to shout him out there. I was at a family party, family surprise birthday party for a former Notre Dame track star who turned a round number, and it was a movie night, and of course the movie on the projector screen was Rudy, which I'm sure everyone was in tears with by the end of the night. I did not make it till the end of the night, but
yeah.
Shout out to Ned Beattie.
It's the gift that keeps on giving if you're Notre Dame. So yeah, Ned Beattie and definitely the baseball team. That was fun to watch. I'm not a baseball guy in any stretch of the imagination, but they were a fun team to watch. And like that home run from Nico last night. I don't know if you got, did you see that?
I saw a clip on
I mean, to watch it live, you're just sort of sitting there kind of half paying attention. You're like, holy crap. That, I mean, it's like Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs from the World Series run a few years ago. That just thing was a screamer out of there. So they were a fun team to watch. It was kind of cool watching a Notre Dame sport play on June 14th. You know, it's like, I always felt like it's a good year. It's a good way to end the academic year when, like, you know, you see lacrosse in the national, you know, the Final Four on Memorial Day weekend. Sometimes it's cool to sort of see those sports who don't get a lot of pub get it. And baseball certainly got it and deserved it this year. I mean, Link Jarrett, kind of the coach who did the best job of probably any Notre Dame coach this year. I mean, the way he turned that program around and through a pandemic and then in 2 years is pretty remarkable.
I don't want to dismiss Brian Kelly. He did a pretty good job.
He also did a great job. However, I mean, as you know, like Notre Dame baseball, you were saying like when they joined the league, it looked like the program might be dead. Notre Dame football, we're talking about, hey, they join the ACC. It's actually easier if they do.
Fair enough.
So yeah, Link Jarrett, here's to you. Job well done this year. I think that's how we'll wrap up this edition of the Shamrock. We'll be back. I don't think we have any vacations planned, so there's not going to be any breaking college football news while over the next few days.
Well, you're in Mexico, and I'm 5 miles from Mexico.
Exactly. So we'll be back intermittently over the summer, of course. Hopefully we'll have some guests lined up. And thanks for being with us on this latest episode. He's Matt. I'm Pete. You've been listening to The Shamrock, brought to you by The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.